This is continuing coverage in the trial of Richard Merritt from the Hidden Killers podcast on the True Crime Today Network.
You all may be seated. Mr. Quain, is defense ready to proceed?
Your Honor.
You'll call your first witness.
Your Honor, first, defense moves to introduce several authenticating document, which is a certified copy of warrant 19W001968. Move as you said, defense number two.
Can you see that, please?
Sure.
No objection.
Admit it. Defense, Your Honor, defense calls Mr. Richard Merritt to the stand.
Sir, raise your hand. Do you swear a the testimony that the court gave you the truth, the whole truth, and not the truth, sir?
I do.
State your name, Mr. Merritt.
Richard Vinson Merritt.
And Mr. Merritt, where were you born?
Fort Belvoir, Virginia.
And did you grow up in Virginia?
Well, initially, so the first 3 years of my life there, my father was in the Air Force. He was career Air Force. He actually retired as a bird colonel after 24 years of service. But at the time I was born, we were stationed there, I believe it was at the Pentagon. We stayed there for about 3 years. When I was 3 years old, we moved to Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. Stayed there for another 3 years and went back to D.C. where we stayed until I was 13 when my father retired. And at that point, he took a job with McDonnell Douglas, which back then was one of the world's largest military aircraft manufacturers. We went and lived overseas in Saudi Arabia for 2 years. At that time, you could not attend school past the ninth grade in Saudi Arabia, so I came back and actually went my sophomore year at the Paideia School here in DeKalb County. And then my dad was transferred to St. Louis to company headquarters where I spent my junior and senior year of high school. So I moved around a lot.
What's your father's name?
He went by Ken, but his full name was Robert Kenneth Merritt.
And when did your father pass?
He passed away in November of 2000.
Obviously, your mother's name was?
Shirley.
Do you have a brother?
I do.
And what's your brother's name?
Robert Kenneth Merritt II.
And is there an age gap between the two of you?
About 9 years.
Who's older, who's younger?
My brother would be the older one.
Now, growing up, or what was the dynamics of the family? Was it just the four of you?
It was just the four of us. As I just mentioned, we moved around a lot. That was primarily when my brother had already gone off to college. He was in college by the time I was third or fourth grade. But the dynamic when he was still around or came to visit was, you know, we had a very traditional, conservative, southern military household. My father was, as I said, career military. He went on to be a successful businessman. My mother sold real estate, was very good at it with her personality and natural intelligence. She was a star at it. And, you know, my brother and I, you know, we got along. My father definitely ruled the roost. He was the boss, but my mother certainly had her say, too. It was definitely a partnership.
Now, when did you guys move to 1590 Planters Row?
My parents bought that house in the summer of 1993. That would have been the end of my freshman year at the University of Georgia.
Now, is that where you went for undergrad?
Yes, I went to UGA.
And did you graduate from UGA?
I did.
What did you major?
I was a double major in English and political science, basically pre-law.
And did you go to law school?
I did.
And where did you go to law school?
I went to law school at Mississippi College School of Law in Jackson, Mississippi.
Now, while you were in undergrad, did you meet a certain lady?
I met a certain lady. Her name was Janine Minicozzi. I met Janine when she was a freshman and I was a junior. I'm about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more than a year and a half older than her. But we met through a, excuse me, we met through a mutual friend.
And how long did you date before you got married?
Well, early on, we dated off and on as kids do at Georgia, just enjoying the scene there in Athens. But as I proceeded into my senior year. It was, I guess, spring quarter of my senior year, getting ready to graduate. We became more serious and decided we wanted to stay in a committed relationship.
Now, by the time, what year did you get married?
We got married in 1999, about a week after I graduated law school.
And during that time, was she a veterinarian yet?
No, I believe she started her first year of vet school, either my second or third year of law school, because she was still had a couple years to go when I graduated law school.
Now, by this time, when you got married, was your father still around?
Yes, he was.
What year did he pass?
2000, about a year after we got married.
So during this time, did your mom help you out?
Yeah, they both did. At the time, I took me 3 attempts past the bar. I passed it the third time. I failed the first 2 times. I did thankfully have a job as a project manager with a local internet company, so I didn't have the pressure of needing the license, although it certainly would have been nice to get that under my belt right away. But yeah, there were times when my parents helped us here and there while she was still in school, sure.
Between you and your mother?
Well, after my dad died, it was, as you can imagine, just my brother and I and our immediate family. We are close to a lot of extended family, had a lot of close friends. But in terms of our family, it was obviously just my brother, mom, and I, and we were close.
So what year did you and Janine get married?
1999.
And did the two of you have kids?
Yes.
Who are the kids?
The firstborn is our son, Jack, and our secondborn is our daughter, Mia.
Now, Jack, you've heard a little bit about him. Were you involved in his life?
Absolutely. Jack was the kind of son that every father wants to have. He was smart. He was a sensitive kid. He was creative. He was handsome, he was athletic, he was everything you wanted somebody to be. Just a real strong, special child. And he was my pal. I mean, we did everything at an early age. We went fishing. When he got older, we played a lot of golf. We went on trips, father-son trips. We went on trips with other dads and their sons that we were friends with. I went to all of his school activities, helped coach his baseball team. Helped out with football. As I said, it was those big things that brought us closer, but it was the little things as well. Just going to Target or hopping in the truck and going for a drive or, things of that nature as well.
Now, Mia, I understand she has a disability. What's her disability?
Yes, Mia has cerebral palsy, and we did not know that she had a disability until she's about a year or so old. She was not reaching her milestones as the pediatrician wanted her to, and upon further testing, they realized that she had a form of cerebral palsy.
So you and your wife have to put her in programs right now?
Yes. I mean, she required special schooling, special therapies. As she got older, she required speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy. She had a walker and a wheelchair at a young age, and obviously as she grew bigger and taller and stronger, she had bigger walkers and bigger wheelchairs, but she's always going to require the aid of one of those devices and always going to require therapy. She's had a couple surgeries to help her perhaps walk better. She can't walk without the aid of a walker, and her speech is slurred and her development is delayed.
Now, were you involved with her therapies and in progress along with your wife?
Yes, as much as I could be. I mean, when I opened my firm in 2002, as you can imagine, it was extremely busy. I was running my cases, trying to get new clients, attending court. It was just me to start off with. So those early years, I couldn't be at every single thing. That was the case when I was at a large firm before I opened up my own firm. So I went to everything I reasonably could, but certainly I couldn't be at everything. But the things I couldn't attend, we certainly talked about after the fact because I wanted to be involved in her life.
And you mentioned your practice. What type of law did you practice?
Well, in 2010, I opened up my own law firm. And before that, I had been at a large law firm in Buckhead. But I've always been a litigator, primarily civil litigation, mainly personal injury, wrongful death, medical malpractice, some business litigation. When I opened up my own firm, I also did a little bit of criminal defense. I really didn't do felony work. I did a lot of DUIs, things of that nature.
Now, during this time, around 2010, and as the practice grew, what type of lifestyle were you and Janine living?
When the firm opened in 2010? Mm-hmm. Well, we were a very sociable couple. We lived in a very diverse neighborhood in Smyrna, within walking distance to downtown Smyrna, where a lot of the restaurants and whatnot were at. The neighborhood was primarily people like us, two professionals, small kids. So there were a lot of children the same age as our children's ages. We got together for barbecues. We went to events together. We had each other over at each other's houses. There were a lot of sleepovers for the kids. Kids played baseball together in the local Smyrna Little League. So there's always something going on, whether it was a neighborhood event or going to some sort of lawyer event or an event associated with her veterinary practice. We were out and about.
Now, by this time, the father's passing, did anyone else live at 1590 Plainer Grove besides your mother?
No.
And up until her death, did anyone else live there besides you?
No.
Now, during this time, 2010, 2015, what was your relationship with your kids and your wife?
In 2010?
2010 to 2015. How was the family dynamic?
The only way to describe my family dynamic and my marriage was it was a dream. We were happy. We were fun-loving. We laughed a lot. You know, Janine and I did a fair amount of traveling. We were always doing things with the children. We didn't like to sit around and watch TV. We weren't that type of couple. We weren't sedentary by any means. I was always trying to promote her career, and she was promoting mine. A lot of times we'd find out that we had clients in common and didn't even know it. And it was just a very idyllic way to live, to be married and to raise kids, to be in a place that you enjoyed, around people you enjoyed, and to be building something, to be building a future.
Now, 2018, what happened?
In 2018, I was arrested in Cobb County for multiple counts of theft, forgery, and there were some counts also of elder exportation because I did steal money from some elderly folks.
Now, your arrest, was that a big deal in Cobb County?
Yes, it was a big deal in Cobb County. Just a little bit of background. I was one of the few lawyers in Smyrna, and Smyrna has grown a lot since I started my practice in 2010, but it was right on the little village square across from the courthouse. I was the only firm there. That was part of why I picked that area, because I saw a need. I wanted to be the local lawyer that people went to first for help. And it was a very successful vision. And so the practice grew. And when things went south quickly and I got arrested several years later in 2018, it was a shock to our neighbors, the local community, and to the Cobb County Bar.
Now, when you got arrested, how many times did you get arrested?
Actually, the first time I got arrested in connection with the Cobb County fraud was in April of 2017. It was shortly after spring break that year. We had just gotten back, and I had a letter from the Cobb County Magistrate Court telling me that I needed to appear at a warrant application hearing. And what that basically means is somebody has taken out a warrant for your arrest, and a judge has to determine if there's probable cause or not. So this hearing was on a Monday morning, and I went to the hearing. It happened to be two of the older ladies who were victims in the main arrest In January of 2018, they had taken out a warrant for one account of theft by conversion, alleging I'd stolen $70,000 of their settlement money. We had the hearing, and the judge found that there was probable cause. And the judge said, well, I'm going to set your bond at $2,000, and I will give you until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. to appear at the Cobb County Jail. I left court. When I saw Janine that night, I told her, as soon as I saw her after the kids were in bed, I said, I need to tell you something. She said, what? I said, I have a warrant for my arrest. And I explained to her what it was. I said, I don't know the extent of it. I know they're claiming I stole $70,000. Need to figure out more about it. But in the meantime, I need to appear at the Cobb County Jail tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And so the next morning, she went with me early to James Bond Bonding Company, one of the bonding companies up there off of County Services Road. And we filled out the bond paperwork. She was the surety on the bond and paid the $200-some-odd down, which is the 10% of the $2,000. And I turned myself into the Cobb County Jail shortly before 9 o'clock and was out by 2 o'clock that afternoon.
So the first time, she bonded you up?
Correct. Janine knew that I had been accused of a felony theft. She knew that I had booked in and out of the Cobb County Jail. And that was the last we ever discussed it, until I was arrested along with everybody else, all the other victims, I should say, in January of 2018.
So the second time, did she provide any assistance to get you out of jail?
No, she did not. To say she was less than pleased would be a vast understatement. I was driving to deliver papers to somebody the morning of January 31st, 2018. Several months earlier, I had voluntarily surrendered my bar license. The bar had been investigating this. I knew what was coming. And it was just odd to me that I had never received an invitation from a detective to talk about it or anything like that. They just built their case, and then wham, there it was. So that's how they chose to proceed. But I was arrested on January 31st. I was, as I said, going to deliver some papers. A Cobb County Sheriff's Deputy SUV pulled up behind me, blue lighted me. I pulled over in a Taco Bell parking lot. And several unmarked Crown Vics appeared as well. I didn't learn until several hours later the scope and extent of what I was being charged with. I reached out to her from the jail. I knew, based on my experience as a lawyer, that I would not be bonding out in the next few weeks. And sure enough, did not have a formal bond hearing before a Superior Court judge until about 2 weeks later. But Janine was very upset, didn't understand what was going on, which is certainly understandable. I frankly didn't know the extent of what was going on, although I had a pretty good idea. And that was her reaction at the beginning of that whole process.
So that case, how many victims were there?
There were 15 victims and 34 felony counts.
And you mentioned all of you sit in jail waiting to go to court.
It's about 2 weeks, maybe a little less.
And did you ever have to hire a lawyer on that case?
I did.
And who was your lawyer?
David Willingham.
And were you able to pay him, or did somebody else pay him?
At that time, funds were extremely tight and limited. I was in the Cobb County Jail. Janine was scrambling to try to make sense of what was going on and take care of the children. So my mother graciously offered to assist with his initial fee payment.
And what was your mother's general demeanor and feelings at this time?
My mother was upset. She was disappointed. She raised me better than that. And she had every right to be upset with me. It was a disgrace. And there's no excuse for my behavior. But she was upset. But at the same time, I was her son. She truly did believe that one should hear out all sides of a situation before making an opinion. And she gave me the benefit of the doubt. And her goal was to help me get out. And then I would get a very stern talking to once out. But her goal at the time was just to support me and try to help me get up the bond money.
How much was your bond?
The bond was $400,000. The down payment for the bond in order to actually get me out was 10%, so that would have been $40,000.
How was that?
My mother, it took about 2 months, but what she ended up doing was taking out a home equity line of credit, basically a second mortgage on her home, in order to come up with the $40,000.
So ultimately, how much time left between your getting a bond and getting out of jail?
I believe it was about 65 or 66 days.
And what were the conditions of the bond?
Well, the bond conditions were as follows. I was to have a curfew of 5 p.m. to 8 a.m., which meant obviously I had to be back at her address. I had to live at her address, first of all. That was the first bond condition. Second condition was I had a curfew of, as I mentioned, 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. So I had to be back by 5 p.m. and I couldn't leave the next morning till, I'm sorry, it was 8 a.m., 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. Obviously, I had to reside at her home in 1590 Planters Row in Stone Mountain, DeKalb County. I wasn't to drink any alcohol, do any drugs without a prescription, not to break any laws of the state of Georgia, pretty standard stuff. They also had me surrender my passport within the first 24 hours of release, which I did, and I was required to wear an ankle monitor.
Now, once you were released, what was the relationship between you and your wife?
It was very contentious. She felt that I had led a double life. She didn't understand why I took money from these people. She was upset. She was shocked. We went from having an idyllic life to having nothing. Despite my urges to try, it was decided that she didn't want to stay in the home, so we let the house go. It was a very nice house that we loved and had lived in and raised our children in and planned to stay in a long time. So the house was gone. She decided to move into a rental home in East Cobb and Marietta, where the public schools are quite good. And my son had attended the Lovett School, which is a private school, but he wasn't going to be able to go there anymore. My daughter went to public school because of her disability, so thankfully she could attend school wherever she wanted, based on having a disability. But it was a major upheaval. I mean, overnight it was as if a bomb went off in our lives.
And at some point in time, she filed for divorce.
Very quickly, she filed for divorce 4 days into my arrest.
And did that divorce ultimately was it complete?
Yes, the divorce was finalized, I believe, third week of June 2018. And I didn't fight her on the divorce. I understood her emotions. I understood the reasons for it. I certainly didn't want her to be accused of having any part of my misdeeds, because I truly did act alone. She wasn't involved. I think early on some folks may not have believed that, but it turned out that the divorce not only was what she wanted emotionally, but perhaps helped out in segregating, you know, my behavior from, you know, obviously her not having an involvement.
Now, after your release, what was your relationship with your kids?
My son was 14 and a half at the time, and as I said, we were very close, and he had me up on a pedestal like a lot of boys do their father, and he was upset with me. He yelled at me, he ignored me, he cried, he was hurting.
There's no relevance to his kids' feelings.
We've heard from Dr. Marcosi, and she went into detail about the things that the son felt, things that the son did, and things the son told her during this time period.
But that doesn't make it relevant. So how is this relevant?
Judge, I'm wrong. But your mother, by this time you've been with your mother.
Yes.
And you're out of jail.
Correct.
What was your relationship with her?
She was She wasn't pleased with my behavior. She was embarrassed. But at the same time, she was willing to give me a chance, give me a place to live, help me survive. I mean, I really didn't have much other than my personal effects and an old pickup truck, literally. So she opened up her home to me, and it was strange being back under her roof at, I guess I was 43, 44 years old when all this went down. But, you know, it after the first several days and weeks, you know, we got into a routine, and it was fairly normal under the circumstances.
Did you and your mother argue, fight?
My mother's a very strong-willed person. I believe the term firecracker was used, and that is a very good term. I would throw another one out there. She's a steel magnolia. My mother is a strong Southern woman, and she had no problem telling me what I thought, what she thought, rather, down to what I wore, to my opinions on certain things. But it was certainly not toxic. We were both opinionated people. We spoke our minds. But we also laughed a lot and spent a lot of time together. So there's nothing abnormal to me or her about it.
Now, as your criminal case made its way through the process, did you start to feel some external pressures?
You mean as we got closer to sentencing? Yes, it was a very odd time. Starting in, I would say, right around the 1st of January 2019, my sentencing hearing had been set way back in September of 2018. I actually wanted a plea earlier and get on with it and get on down the road to prison, but the DA at the time in Cobb County wasn't ready yet. He wanted to make sure there weren't any more victims, which was fine. It's certainly his prerogative. So there weren't any more victims, and then the plea date was set for September. I'm sorry. In September, the plea date was set for January 18th of 2019, a Friday. And right about the 1st of January 2019, my mother's house kind of sits up on a cul-de-sac, and you can see the whole cul-de-sac. And I saw an abnormal amount of cars pulling slowly through, stopping in front of our home. My mother noticed the same thing. I began receiving hang-ups on my cell phone, numbers I didn't recognize. Some said unknown number, but area codes and numbers I didn't know. My mother was receiving the same thing. She showed me her phone, wanting to know if I knew who these numbers were, and I didn't. And this seemed to go on with some frequency up until January 14th of 2019.
Now, during this time, were you speaking with your wife?
Yes, of course.
And likewise, does she have concerns?
I believe, you know, if I recall correctly, she did. The victims in this case have been characterized, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, I'm just trying to answer truthfully and honestly. The victims have been characterized as...
Objection, Your Honor. What the victims have been characterized as is not relevant. I don't know if that's hearsay or where he's coming up with this, but I don't believe that that's relevant.
And they're not victims in this case. There's only one victim in this case.
Correct.
So how is this testimony relevant?
I'm going to move forward.
All right. I'll sustain the objection.
Now, were you with your father?
Yes.
And did you ever feel that maybe somebody was about to get you?
Absolutely. No doubt about it.
Now let's talk about, at some point in time, as we've seen, as in 1, a cartoon arrived.
Yes.
And what day was that?
That was January 14th, 2019.
And who received that cartoon?
That cartoon was received at my mother's home at Planters Row in DeKalb County It was personally delivered in her mailbox and discovered by her.
Did you have discussions with her about it?
Right away. I was, I believe, on my way to work. I was working at a warehouse at the time, and I received a call from her informing me of receipt of this cartoon, and she was upset. And literally, as I hung up with her, I received a call from my ex-wife, Janine, who you've heard from, and she was upset. And what was concerning to me, because it was directed at me as well, not only in the substance of the cartoon, but obviously had to deal with something I was involved in Cobb County. What concerned me was that these are copies of the same cartoon being delivered 40 miles apart, two different counties, with a county or two in between these counties. And it was a concerted effort, whoever delivered them.
Now, within a day or so, what happened to your mother?
Well, actually, it started the night that she received the cartoon. I got back, and she was upset. She started feeling dizzy, having difficulty breathing, having chest pain. She just was very concerned about the cartoon, about the effect on Janine and the kids. And I should add that Janine felt as if, she didn't feel. She was quite adamant that she was keeping my son Jack home from school the next day, and she wasn't going to go to work. And she had called somebody at the Cobb County DA's office or sheriff's office, and I'm not sure which, to inform them of it. And my mother was concerned that they weren't going to do anything, and in fact, they didn't. So there was definitely concern on both sides. My mother had these symptoms. She decided that she needed to go to the ER. Well, I had the ankle monitor on, and the curfew had been moved back to midnight because I had started a job at Petco Warehouse up in Gwinnett County. And in order to make my hours, I had to be able to get the curfew moved back, which my pretrial officer, basically my probation officer, was happy to do because they want you to have a job. So long story short, I wasn't still going to be able to drive her because my mother really didn't make the decision to go to the hospital until probably 10:30, 11 that night. There's no way I could take her there, drop her up, and get back and not be in violation of my monitor. So she was able to drive herself. They admitted her, and I think she was admitted at early morning hours of the 15th, and she was discharged sometimes on the 16th.
Now, after she was discharged, did your mom still have concerns?
It was all we talked about. She got back home that Wednesday when I first encountered her. I remember distinctly sitting at the kitchen table. We were a kitchen table family, so discussions were had at the kitchen table or around the kitchen counter around the island where the sink was. So we talked about it. And back a few days earlier on Monday, I had taken a picture of the cartoon on my phone and sent it to my lawyer, David Willingham, so he was aware. And if I'm not mistaken, he received a copy as well as something else.
And Mr. Queen, this is turning into a lot of narrative, so you need to either ask some specific questions or instruct your client to confine his answers to the questions that are asked. So I'll sustain the objection.
Yes, ma'am. So what did your mother do in response to the cartoon as it relates to the attorney's warning?
She began to draft a letter to Mr. Willingham.
And to your knowledge, was that letter delivered?
To my knowledge, it was.
On what day was this? What day? What is January 15, 16, 17? What day are we?
I remember her showing me a draft of the letter quite soon after she got home, because my mother was the type of person to handle stuff while I was fresh on her mind. So she showed me a draft of it. I said, do whatever you want, send it. And I have no reason to think that's not what happened, and it did in fact happen.
Now, what day was your sentencing hearing?
Friday the 18th.
And how did that go?
It was quite an event. Court that day was to start at 9 a.m. and it lasted all day.
Did you ever plea on that day?
I did.
Did the victim get an opportunity to express their opinions regarding the sentence on that day?
They certainly did. And the way it worked that day is I showed up and entered my plea, but there had not been an agreement on the precise sentencing. I rejected the state's initial offer. The judge assured us that he would not go more serious than that offer. So the hope was maybe I would end up getting a little less time than what the state initially recommended. The judge heard testimony from the victims all day. I believe I was the final person to testify. And then the judge pronounced his sentence 4:35 in the afternoon.
Now, you said you testified. Was it a trial?
No, it was not a trial. I pled guilty in the first few minutes of the proceeding. The rest of the day was simply about the judge hearing from victims, hearing from me, and making a decision on what he wanted the sentence to be. There was no question about my guilt at any point.
And what was the sentence?
The sentence was 30 to 15. Plus, I had to pay back $526,000 in restitution.
Now, did you go to jail that day?
No, I did not.
When were you reported to the jail?
The judge was gracious enough to give me 2 weeks to report, which would be February 1st by 5 p.m. at the Cobb County Jail. And he made it abundantly clear what would happen if I did not show up.
What would happen if you didn't show up?
If I did not show up, he would revoke my sentence, and it would be a serve 30 sentence, which could affect parole and all sorts of other things. So the sentence would be much harsher if I did not appear as scheduled and ordered.
So after sentencing, what did you do during this period of time between sentencing and the day before the show up?
Well, that day, just starting off with how it was handled. I mean, I wasn't surprised. I wasn't upset. I accepted my punishment, and my mother and I got in the car and we left and went back to our house in Stone Mountain. That weekend, we kept the kids. I spent time with my children, like I did a lot of the weekends during my 10 months out on bond. They wanted to see me. I wanted to see them.
So did you have an opportunity to spend time with the kids while you were on bond, even after you took your plea?
Absolutely. That was an area where Janine and I were thankfully in agreement. She made it clear to me, both in and out of the Cobb County Jail during that 60 days I was trying to make bond, she said, you know, if the kids want to see you, I have no problem with you seeing them. And I saw them above and beyond the former divorce settlement agreement. There are many times that I kept them while she did things with her friends. And there really weren't any issues. We communicated, and if I wanted to see the kids and it worked out, great. If not, then so be it. I'd see them next time.
Now, your wife testified regarding the night before you returned to South Bend.
Yes.
And she mentioned that you went to a Starbucks. Did you meet her at the Starbucks?
Yes. My son, Jack, expressly wanted me to pick him up at his school in Buckhead that Wednesday and Thursday to try to get as much time together as we could. And I certainly complied with that and wanted to spend time with him. That Thursday, we went for an early dinner. I took him to the Longhorn Steakhouse in Kennesaw off of Barrett Parkway. We finished kind of early. We walked around the REI Sporting Goods store because we both enjoyed outdoor things together.
Jack, these have become very, very non-responsive. I just ask that he answer the question and not go beyond that.
Mr. Mayor, you need to confine your responses to the questions that are asked. If you don't understand the question, ask that it be clarified.
Yes, Your Honor.
So when you met at Starbucks, were you already with Jack?
Yes.
And when your wife arrived, did she have a meal with her?
She did.
Was there any animosity between any of you?
No.
And let me go back for a moment. By this time, you were in the process of a divorce.
Yes.
Your wife mentioned about an incident. She said that you pushed her down. While you were out on bond, did you ever push your wife down?
Absolutely not.
So let's turn your attention to February 1st.
Okay.
That morning, you built your daughter's doctor appointment.
I did. Janine had told me about a pediatric neurologist appointment that my daughter had about... It was early. I think it was 8 a.m., maybe even a little bit before.
And at that point in time, were you still on curfew?
I was.
So what time were you able to leave the house?
I could not leave a second before 8 a.m.
And the doctor's appointment, where was it?
Sandy Springs.
So what's the route you would take to get there from Planet Earth?
Well, really, the only way to go would be to leave the neighborhood, make a left out of the neighborhood, get back to Hugh Howell, get on 78 to 285.
Now, did you get there on time?
It would be impossible to get there on time, but I got there as soon as I could.
And were there any problems between you and your wife when you got there?
No.
And did you get a chance to see them?
I did. They were already seated with the doctor. I walked in, said hello to everybody, gave me a hug, and sat down and listened to what the doctor had to say.
Now turn your attention to Mr. Jeffco. What's your relationship with Mr. Jeffco?
Mike is technically some degree of a cousin, but we come from a large family where, you know, we don't really get in all that, and I knew Mike my whole life, and we were close.
And was there understanding for Mike to take you, originally to take you to jail?
Yes, I believe Tuesday or Wednesday that week, my mother and I decided that it would probably be best at that time when we had the discussion that Mike come and take my mother to, take me to the Cobb County Jail.
Now, is it that your mother didn't know how to get there?
No, my mother had been to the Cobb County Jail planning to visit me and to go arrange the bond.
So, what caused things to change with that plan? Mr. Jeff would say.
Right. Thursday night, after I got back from seeing the children, my mother and I were talking, and we just felt like it was a private family matter, an intimate family matter. Even though Mike was family, it was something that she and I wanted to share and handle. That was really all there was to it. We didn't want to inconvenience him.
So did you ask your mother to call Mike off?
We both decided that it wasn't necessary for him to be there.
Why is that?
Because we didn't want to inconvenience Mike, because we actually had a few things we wanted to talk about, and we just frankly didn't need anybody else's help.
So the morning of the first, what time did you get back to the house?
Oh, around 8:30, I think. Somewhere in there, 8:30, 8:45.
And tell us what happened that day.
So when I left the doctor's appointment and was driving back, it was the last time that I saw Mia. Before I knew I had to turn myself in later in the day. Mia was my baby girl. She's my princess. So naturally, I was sad. It was a sad ride home, just like the night before after saying goodbye to Jack. When I walked into the way that you got back into my mother's house is that I would park my car in the driveway. Her car was in the garage. If the garage door wasn't open, I'd open it and walk through the garage door into the kitchen. So I walked into the kitchen. I'm sorry?
I was opening the garage door.
The garage door opener.
Did Did you have a separate garage door, or was it on the panel on the door?
No, no, it was in my car. Yeah.
So what's your garage door?
I went inside, and it had been obvious that I was upset. I had tears in my eyes, and she just came over and hugged me. She knew why. I was sad about saying goodbye to my children.
And then what happened later that day?
Well, shortly thereafter, she sent Mike the text saying that things aren't so good here. And that's exactly what it was about. It was just not a happy day. I mean, I was about to go away to prison for possibly 15 years. So it was a private time. There was no yelling or screaming. And I sent him a similar text, and that was that. So after those texts were sent, I started to go through some of my stuff and sort through some of my personal effects. And my mother and I, oddly enough, I had been so busy spending time with the kids and doing other things. She and I hadn't had a discussion about how to organize my clothes or what maybe to sell or any of that kind of basic housekeeping type of stuff. Those were things we needed to talk about. That's what we mentioned in the text when we said we need to discuss things. That's it.
Now, was there a plan for y'all to have lunch together?
Yes, my mother was a great cook, fantastic cook, and she was going to make spaghetti.
So did she start preparations for lunch?
Yes, she did. It was, you know, the plan was we were going to eat around 1 o'clock so that we could be on the road by 2, no later than 2:30. It was, I believe, Super Bowl weekend, Friday afternoon traffic, a bunch of stuff going on in Atlanta. And, you know, obviously we don't want to be late to the jail, given the importance of me being on time. I was walking from the kitchen. I had just left the kitchen from keeping her company while she was making the spaghetti when I heard a very loud knock at the front door. We weren't expecting any visitors. So I went to the front door and I opened it. And there were two individuals there, two men, and they both were pointing pistols at me. And they told me to let them in.
So what'd you do?
I let them in. I had never seen these guys before, and they were pointing pistols at me, so I let them in. I let them in. They shut the door. About this time, my mother came to the foyer where I was standing with these two individuals, and they said, head to the basement and don't say an effing word.
So did you go to the basement?
The taller of the individuals, he was older, probably in his 50s, about 6 feet, athletically built, walked past me, put the gun at my mother's lower back, and she started to head towards the stairway to the basement. The fact they said head to the basement led me to think they knew we had a basement and had cased the house before. The younger of the men, he's probably about 5'8", 5'9", shoulder-length brown hair, pudgy, he put his gun on my back and we followed them. She opened the stair door to the basement, flicked on the light. It was a two-step process to get down those stairs. You had 4 or 5 steps that went down. There's a landing, and then you make the turn, and there's the longer flight of stairs. They proceeded first. My mother was crying. She was making sounds like she might be wanting to scream or shout. And as they made the turn on the landing and took those first few steps, by this point, I and the guy behind me who had the gun on my back made it to the landing. He told her to shut the F up and pushed her down the stairs.
And then what happened to your mother?
It was the worst sound I've ever heard in my life. She plunged headlong into the wall. It's a sound I can hear to this day as I'm sitting here. And I could tell that there was a dent or a hole in the wall. She was trying to get up and move around, but from my vantage point, she appeared like she couldn't get her balance.
Was your mother injured at that time?
She certainly appeared to be. And as I moved like I was going to try to go down the stairs, the guy dug the pistol into my back and grabbed my shoulder. The gentleman who pushed her down the stairs put his pistol behind his back into the back part of his jeans. He ran down the stairs, turned the corner, and came back with the 35 pounds weight that has been seen during the course of this trial. Well, the knife came later. This monster took this dumbbell and proceeded to bludgeon my mother right in front of me. And she stopped moving at this point. He then told the man who had his pistol in my back to bring me down to the bottom of the stairs. They shoved me over to the tile where the dumbbell rested. And then the older guy took off up the stairs. He came back a few minutes later with the kitchen knife and proceeded to stab my mother repeatedly in front of me. I cannot believe what I was seeing. I didn't understand what would be the purpose because she wasn't moving. Why is any of this happening? It was a complete and utter nightmare.
So what did you do?
There's nothing I could do. I had a pistol to my back. I couldn't believe this was happening. I had no clue who these people were or why they were doing this to us. So he stabbed her with such force that the handle broke off the knife. I didn't realize at the time that the knife was still stuck in my poor mother's face. He put the handle down on the tile across from the dumbbell. He then turned and looked at me, and he pulled out his cell phone. And he proceeded to show me a picture of my ex-wife dropping Mia off at her school, a picture of Jack being dropped off or picked up at Lovett, a picture of them all getting out of her van at their rental home in Marietta, and a picture of her either coming or going from her clinic in Vinings. And he said, and I'll never forget this as long as I live, if you say a single word, they're next. I had no doubt who they were or what next meant. And then they left.
And then, did you call the police?
No, I did not call the police. Because I just witnessed an unimaginable act of violence. Two unimaginable acts of violence. And then a man coldly looked at me after he's standing over the body of my dear mother that he skewered and bludgeoned and shows me pictures of my family. So no, I did not call the police.
How much longer did you stay there?
I stood there numb and incapable of moving for what seemed like minutes. These guys had left. I went upstairs. All I could think about was Janine and the kids and what these monsters could do. And I went and got a small backpack out of my room. I put a few clothes. I didn't pack much. Some basic toiletries. And I left.
Why did you take your mother's car?
I took my mother's car because it had more gas in it than my car. It had a bigger tank. And I had no idea where I was going or where I was going to end up. And it seemed to me in that state of mind that at least her car would be easier to sleep in. And that's why I took her car.
So where'd you go?
When I left her house, I went out of the neighborhood. I don't even know what time of day it was when I left. But I went out of the neighborhood. I made a right. And went up, I believe it was called Rockbridge, but it becomes Five Forks Trail, and we're right at the DeKalb County, Gwinnett County line. And I made a left. I'm not sure if it was Arcata or Killian Hill, but up by the Kroger there, and just started heading towards 85.
Now, how much time did it take to get to Nashville? Now, were you just right in Nashville?
No, I didn't go all the way to Nashville in one shot. I ended up going to the QT station at Indian Trail in 85. I stopped to get a couple of bottles of water, some snacks. I only had $18 cash on me. I topped off the tank, I believe, put some gas in it, and then I proceeded towards Cobb County, towards 285, and then ultimately to 75.
Why did you cut your monitor off?
Well, the reason I cut my monitor off is I was concerned by the time I got north of Cobb County, you know, I was within, I believe, an hour or so of when I was supposed to report. I had no idea if just by routine the monitoring people were watching me or not. So that's why I headed towards Cobb County. I didn't want to do anything that would get me involved with the police, because I didn't want it to come back to hurt my family if these guys found out and thought I had said something.
Now, why did you take both phones?
For that very reason. I had every reason to believe, based on this horrific event, that these individuals had a lot of hate for me, had been following me and or my ex-wife and kids, and perhaps they had our numbers, perhaps they were the ones who had been calling and hanging up. I didn't know. I wanted to have the phones in case they had demands, if they went back to the house. I had to know what was going on. And if Janine called either myself or my mother, I wanted to know what was going on with her, that she was okay, that the kids were okay. So that's why I took both phones.
So how long did it take you to get to Nashville?
Ultimately, I probably got to Nashville. I mean, I think they're an hour behind, but I ended up in Nashville after dark. Of course, it was wintertime, so it gets dark early everywhere, but it was probably 7-8 o'clock Central Time by the time I actually got there.
And why did you stay in Nashville?
Nashville is a big city. I had no more money to buy gas, and it seemed like a safe place to pull off and park and try to figure out what in the world was going on.
And eventually, did you get a job in Nashville?
Yes, I got a job at a bar called Betty's Bar and Grill on the west side of Nashville.
And you heard yesterday, well, last week from Kelly Richardson. And how'd you meet Kelly?
I met Kelly online.
And did you start living with Kelly?
Fairly quickly, yes.
Were the two of you in a relationship?
Yes.
Did she know who you were?
No, she did not.
And why didn't you tell her?
I did not tell her because, again, in my mind, with how horrific the events of my mother's murder were, how graphic the people were capable of such insane violence, I had to believe that they would keep the word and take it out on my ex-wife and my children if anything was said. So I adopted a new identity, and I made a vow to myself that I would never reveal who I was. And there were many, many times I wanted to Kelly, but I wanted to tell her that I was accused of a murder I did not commit, but I didn't, because I didn't want to endanger her and I didn't want to endanger Janine and the kids.
Now, Kelly Did you and Kelly ever have any problems, anything in bond between the two?
No, no, absolutely not.
She was telling us that around about the date in which you got arrested, that she wanted you to move out or stay somewhere else. What was going on there?
Kelly, at the time, was a PhD student in chemistry, and she had a lot of work to do, and she needed her space. It wasn't relationship space. It was, hey, just go find somewhere else to be for a day or two so I can get my project done. That's all it was.
Now, during, by that time, what happened to the car?
I want to say it was the Wednesday or Thursday before I got arrested. I got arrested Monday, September 30th, 2019 in Nashville by the Marshals. I want to say Thursday the 26th, I woke up. I believe Kelly was already in class or at her lab, and the car was gone. Kelly lived in an attic apartment in an old house on 18th Avenue near the university, and I didn't know it, but apparently there were a lot of break-ins, and learned after the fact that the car had been broken into, and during investigation of it by the Vanderbilt police, the car got towed, and that's what ultimately led to my capture. So I woke up, walked out, the car was gone.
So did you have anywhere to stay with the car being gone?
Not right off the bat, no.
Tell us how you ended up getting arrested.
Yeah, on that Monday, I was, the weather was starting to change in Nashville. It was getting cool at night. I was walking in West Nashville in an area called Sylvan Park where Betty's was and a few other places that I knew. And there was the old Southern Thrift Shop, which I had bought good cheap clothes before. And I was just looking for a light jacket because I didn't have one. And as I was done browsing through the store, I didn't see one. I started to walk out, and next thing I knew, I was surrounded by five or six marshals, and my face was in the floor looking up at them. And they told me I was under arrest.
So, Richard, getting back to February 1st.
Yes.
Did you kill your mother?
Absolutely not. I loved my mother. She stood by me. I'm not a violent person. Never laid a finger on anybody.
For 10 minutes.
You're listening to the trial of Richard Merritt from the Hidden Killers podcast on the True Crime Today Network. Press subscribe now and get ad-free episodes by upgrading to our premium experience through Apple Podcasts. More next.